It's The Rock Show with Gully and Joe, and this is a special, and we're going to review the album Venom, Possessed. And we didn't pick this. A certain individuals with us picked it for us. David Ingram, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. I picked this. When did I pick this? It must have been a while ago, because...
You're actually our most regular guest now. This is the third time you've been on.
And we've been doing this... Okay.
But we love you. And
thank you.
We'll be doing this review show on the side, and we thought we'd get you on to talk about a new album. And we thought, well, why don't we get you on to do a review show with us? And it was you that selected it. I said, what about a Venom album? No, I can't remember which one, how it went about, but we managed to narrow it down to Venom and Possessed. So here we are.
Awesome.
So, yes, you've got the new album... Well, the debut album by Ursin. Am I pronouncing that right?
Ursina. Yeah.
Swim with the Leviathan. And you've got something else you want to tell us afterwards as well. But let's talk about that to begin with. The projects kind of came around when you did the gig with Hail of Bullets at a certain festival. I remember you telling us last time you were on.
We had the idea, myself and Johnny Peterson, to do a band. He wrote me and asked to partake in one of his projects, which I did. And then I said, well, look, how about we do something together? Because I was working with Rogger, and I thought, let's broaden my horizons. Nothing against Rogger at all. And Rogger was totally into the idea himself. So, and I said to Johnny, let's do something. And we actually, this was 18 months before we met at the Maryland Death Fest when I was in my short tenure with Hail of Bullets. So we actually had the album recorded. It was ready. And I was going to come home from that festival and write and record vocals. And we had a photograph taken of the two of us together about 5 minutes after I'd walked off stage, which is why I look like I've been dragged through a hedge backwards. But, it had taken so long, because then when I got home from the festival, Rogger had written and said, here's the second Echelon album, and we've got a deadline. So I had to get that written and done first, and then do the Ursina. So, that was pretty much how it went. But, it's taken a while. It's taken almost 2.5 years to come to fruition. But now that it has, I'm absolutely over the fucking moon with the outcome.
Oh, it's a great album. I'm still waiting for my copy to arrive. I don't know. It must be sitting in a post office somewhere. But I've seen people have bit by bit are posting photos of theirs that's newly arrived. And we did get a download sent, but I think, I don't know what went wrong, but there's something wrong with the track listing. So it's all a bit higgledy-piggledy.
The track listing on the download is not the same as the one on the album. That was sort of a mistake via me, Johnny, and Kunal all together. So no one's really to blame. It was just, we kind of forgot to put it in order.
Oh, I thought it was something wrong with just the way I downloaded it. But
No, it was us.
But it's funny because you've been doing quite a lot of projects lately. Ever since the first Down of the Dead Men album, you've been on average about an album a year. And it's always off. Yeah, I've always kind of thought, what more can he do? And then with Echelon, especially where you work with Rogger, it was very like, no, this is actually a lot different. And then the second Echelon album was even more. And then with Ursina came out, it was, you do keep changing with every album. And obviously with the vocalist is the most distinctive of all sounds. It's great that you do keep hitting it out of the park and bringing something new every time. And I think also it shows you how diverse a genre death metal can be.
Well, absolutely. Although one thing I will quickly interject with is on the Ursina album, the one thing that if you think the vocals are different, you know, from previous releases, but another thing that adds another facet to that album is the guitar tone. The HM2 Swedish everything on 11+2, you know, that Johnny got, and the Swedish old school Swedish bands used to use, and that was something that we planned on, and Johnny's always used it's like his trademark sound, and for the newest stuff that he sent me through, he said, don't worry, there will be that effect put on there. I just want this so you can hear everything very clearly, and also because we now have a new bass player, and we wanted to give the music to her for her to play. Sonia, her name is, she's Dutch. And we wanted her to have clean music. And then we said, we're going to put the effects on after, so it's okay. And I think, I see Johnny's going to add an extra guitar track as well. So it's not like it was just, these were just demos. But we, as I was saying, this HM2 thing is, it's an integral part of the band.
There's some not odd choices, good choices, but ones that you think, oh, I'm not too sure. But then when you hear them, you're presently relieved.
Are the colors?
Yeah. When I heard Turn in Japanese, I was laughing along. I was thinking, wankers.
Yeah, well, actually,
they pulled it off. It was brilliant.
Yeah, that's what the song's about. It's about wanking. It's about masturbating. In a very politically correct world, that is a non-politically correct song, really. It's something that I sat in my youth, and I've always wanted to do a cover of it. And same with Crazy Horses. It's about 20 years ago I'd planned on doing a cover of that with a friend of mine here in Copenhagen, but it never came to pass.
Your Parasol was as well.
I'm a big, huge, huge Queens of the Stone Age fan. So wanted to do that one and also get Cam Lee in on it as well. And then there's the Susie and the Banshees one. Again, I was going to do that with a friend here in Denmark, but he moved away. So, he's still in Denmark, but he's like the other side of the country. Donovan, the guy who was on my Metal Breakfast radio show as well with me, the American. Anyway, yeah. We were going to do that, Susie and the Banshees, as a cover of our own, just to, you know, have some fun. But again, I say he moved away. And so I thought, yeah, we'll get them done. Now for the next album, because we're already planning it, we've got, we're going to do a two-disc release, which will be a full-length album of original material. Because a couple of people have gone, you did four covers. Why didn't you do four? It's like, oh, just shut up. It's fun. You know, come on.
Yeah, exactly. You'd always get that. Yeah.
Well, you can't please all of the people all of the time. I've learned that in my time. But full length, one disc. And the other disc will be several cover versions. Don't know how many just yet. And there's also going to be demos from the first album. We've got a bunch of the old demo tracks. And I said, let's put those on as well. So, and they're sounding pretty good. We'll give them a bit of a mastering. And Robert's your mother's brother.
There used to be this band in Liverpool that used to cover Crazy Horses. And it's one of them tracks that if you get out to enough like gigs, you'll hear someone covering that particular song. It's a cool song. And the band that done it was shit, but it still sounded cool, to be honest.
Yeah, I've had a few strange cover versions played live. There was a band that came, it was in Birmingham. I can't remember which band it was. And they were sort of the middle act on a show. I think Cerebral Fix were headlining. And this band were playing, and they did a cover version of Samantha Fox's Touch Me. It's like a death metal version with higher pitched, death metal vocals, but the higher ones. And it was weird, but fun nonetheless. I enjoy that, you know. And we've got the covers for the next album. I'm not going to say, because I don't want to give anything away. There's one that we're planning on doing, which we're not even going to list on the album because we'll get into so much fucking trouble covering that. So, yeah.
And you've just recorded vocals for another project, if you want to announce it on the show for us.
Oh, yes, it's the latest, the third Down Among the Dead Men album. In fact, 5 minutes before we started the interview, I finished off the tiny vocal effects, a bit of whispering and some laughter overdubs I had to do for the album. And now I've just got to edit and get it all packed off and sent to the guy who's going to mix it all together. And we should have a sort of a viable, listenable copy within about a month, maybe 6 weeks. Depends on how busy the guy is at the studio. Ronnie, the guy who mixed the first Down Among the Dead Men album. We're getting him back in on this.
So how's this new album going to measure up against the other two sound-wise? The first one was quite dischargey in a death metal-y kind of way.
Well, that's what the we went for, was, yeah.
Yeah, and this second one was a bit more metal. How's this one?
It's sort of... I would personally say... sound-wise, well, it's hard to say sound-wise because it depends on the mix, but I'm thinking we're going to go for a balance in between the two albums, the first and the second album. So, and that's where we're going to go for that. And the song-wise, well, there's no blast beats on this album. It's all sort of D-beat punk. with the usual, I would like to say, hooks in the chorus and certain passages in the song that makes you go, oh, that beats good. There's a couple of other things that we tried. There's one song that I thought sounded like, doesn't sound like Down Among the Dead Men, but I thought, well, let me just try some vocals on that, and bingo, it sounds completely different, but it fits with the rest of the album. So, and
continuity is always something that you want to get as well. So if you've got that with the new stuff, after listening to the other stuff too, it's good to change things up as well.
Oh, yeah,
you've
got
to have that continuity.
Yeah, you've got to have a little bit of evolution in the band. You can't be completely exactly 100% the same, because that's when people will switch off. Sometimes people will say, when you do change, oh, but it sounds nothing like it used to. Again, you can't please all of the people all of the time. But the one thing that it's either going to make people happy or it's going to piss them off is, again, all the lyrics are about Doctor Who.
Nice. So moving on to our little review. It's Venom Possessed. The album came out in 1985. I was 8. I probably wasn't into Venom at this particular time. And Kronos, Mantos and Abaddon. And what does this album mean to everyone? For me, I'm not really into Possessed. And this album, like this, for me, Venom, they were cool, and I've been listening back to Venom Inc. stuff as well, because we interviewed the guy from Venom Inc. the other day, so I was listening to that stuff too. But this stuff is thrashy and cool for me, and especially the first track, which is Power, that kicks in with some nice double kick, and it's a good opener, and there's some thrashy solos, and what I've written in my notes is that it takes me back to when I had hair, which is a very fucking long time ago. So first track for me is fucking, it's pretty cool. What does everyone else think?
Well, the first thing is, what I found was, amongst all of the metalheads that I knew, they were all very disappointed, because they got black metal and then At War With Satan. And At War With Satan had that sort of 20-minute epic song, and it was almost like a concept. And it was different, so everyone liked it. They all loved it. And they were expecting either another black metal or another At War With Satan. And I thought, they're not going to go for that. They're going to go for an album full of songs. Shorter ones, some longer. It doesn't really matter. They'll just, you know, spread it all out on the vinyl. And that's what they went for. And I loved it. I love that album. It is so underrated, because so many of the Venom fans are like, it's not that good. And yes, it is. Listen to it. Then that's the memory. And also around the time, I actually lost a couple of friends. It was 85. I just left school, or I was about to leave school. So, young teen, hot-headed idiot. I'd lost a lot of friends because they didn't like the album. And I stood up for something, you know, I was passionate about it. I stood up for it and fell out with people, but at least I stood up for something that I believed in passionately, when I always will do that.
Yeah, for me, I've really only listened to it properly for this episode. I've got what's the first one called? Welcome to Hell and Blackmail, mainly for reference. I sort of bought them because they were important albums, but only really got into Venom properly in the last year or so. So I don't think I would have took quite as much notice of this album had I not had to do the research for this episode, but I'm glad I did, because I really, really like this album. I think it's a sort of underrated gem in the album, and I don't know why it's so sort of sneered at by a lot of people, because, well, it's the last album with the original lineup for a start. And I think when I've read certain reviews and listened to a lot of people say the production is what lets it down. I think what lets it down is the album cover. And I don't think people should overlook the importance of a decent album cover, because the amount of times you see an album that's slagged off and then you actually play it on and it's just like, yeah, just that shit artwork. That was what was wrong with it. Mate, people should, you know, fucking pull their head out of their ass a little bit. But no, all in all, I think this is a great album. It's got some great songs. The sort of raw production, I think, gives it actually a bit more charm. Yeah. It has that sort of rehearsal studio feel about it. So it's almost as if, it's almost like you've unearthed a hidden album that was never released, sort of, when you listen to it, especially when you realise it's actually quite good as well.
Yeah.
plenty of hidden gems on there, and I think some of Mantis's great, like, best guitar work is on this album as well.
Awesome, it is.
There's some great solos on it as well, but the one thing, and you mentioned the production values, and me, I'm a stickler for stuff like this. The songs where they've got, like, extra effects on the vocals are the ones where they've spent a little bit more money, and there's others where the vocals just disappear, and you can fucking belt out a tune. It gets to the point where you're like, you really, I've got my headphones, I've got the music up really loud, and on certain songs, which we'll come on to later, it just disappears, and what little you do here, you're like, why isn't that turned up? And then you go to other songs where it's like special effect and like everything else is fucking really quiet. I can see it, and it gets on my nerves, because if it wasn't for that, the album would be better, and that's, it's just one of the things I just can't get over with this album. It could be so much better if they just fucking mixed it a little bit better, just a little
bit. I'd love it if Venom Inc are doing a lot of touring at the moment, but even the other Venom,
bloody hell, yeah, it's great.
Some of the songs from this, if they put in their live set, would be brilliant. Like, it would really sort of blow the cobwebs away and give the songs a bit of a new lease of life, and I think it'd wake a lot of people up to the album as well.
I think when I saw them, it was a couple of years ago, they played here in Copenhagen. I think they did Too Loud for the Crowd. That's on there.
Oh, really? Okay, that's good.
And saying that, going back to about the cover, yes, I totally agree. The cover could have been better. I don't know what they were thinking about with the cover or who made that decision, but I've got a damn sorry feeling that it was it the band? I wouldn't think so.
I'm not sure either.
No, no, it is. It is the band, because the kids that are on it, relatives of one of the fucking band members.
Oh, right.
I was reading
okay.
that today when I was doing a bit of a research, and yeah, apparently it's one of the band members' relatives, like nieces and nephews and shit. So it was one of them.
Okay,
and it isn't the best.
No,
let's be honest.
No, one memory that sprung to mind is I remember there was a television show on Channel 4 in England called Extracelestial Transmission, ECT, and Venom were on there, and they started playing, and it was just, and you could not hear a single note, because they, you know how Venom play, they play bloody loud, and it wasn't until they got to the chorus, and it was Too Loud for the Crowd, that you could actually tell what the song was. There was absolutely no way. I mean, typical television sound capabilities and production is awful. I don't know if you've ever watched BBC and they do a live broadcast of a metal band. It sounds horrible. It doesn't matter.
They can never get it
right.
No,
they never do. Like, get someone in who knows the music, but they don't. They've got someone who knows the BBC orchestra or something. So there you go. But that's just a slight aside. But I just remember this Venom performance, and I saw them on that tour in 85 as well. I was at the Birmingham Odeon. Let me a quick recap here, because this is what this album does. It inspires memories for me. It's the Birmingham Odeon. I can't remember the exact date, but openers were Exodus. They're on their Bonded by Blood tour. Second band on were a local band called the Redbeards from Texas.
Nice.
A little more on that. And then Venom afterwards. Now, Venom were told they couldn't use any pyrotechnics because the building, we could have gone up in flames. So they were a bit pissed off halfway through the show, because like Kronos walked off and then came back on and was like incredulous because none of the pyrotechnics had gone off, you see. So there was that. But this band, the Redbeards from Texas, they were a local band that sort of wanted to be the Redbeards. They wore big fake beards and big hats and played that sort of style of music. And they were just spat on the entire time that they were playing. The crowd were not having any of it, because it was billed as the Blast Blitz and Boogie Night.
That sounds like a combination.
Yeah, and they were just spat on. And towards the end of the show, someone spat at the singer and it went shlump into his mouth.
Oh, lovely.
And he carried on playing. He walked off stage. Now, I know this for a reason, but I'll explain what that is in a minute. But he walked off stage, just stopped and just barfed and just chucked up all over the floor at the side of the stage, backstage. The reason I know this is because the one guitarist in the band, a guy called Craig, who went on to be Benediction's manager.
Nice.
All right.
back in, he started being the Benediction manager in late 93, early 94, I think. And he used to play in the Redbeards. So that's how I know about that. But yeah, also that gig, Exodus, on their Bonded by Blood tour. So it was with Paul Baloff.
Oh, you saw some with him, yeah?
Yeah, it was the original Exodus, the whole thing. So that was pretty special. And I also remember that this, I don't know, about 2,000-seater hall only had about 300 people in it. And in the upstairs balcony where I was, because I got a banner that I hung over which said, "Welcome to Birmingham," because I was a massive Venom fan and still am. And I was up there, and there was two other people on the other side of the balcony, and they got a banner as well. And that was it. Upstairs was empty. There was like four people up there. It was me and the person I was with and these other two. And then downstairs, it was just like the front circle that was filled with people, and the rest of the hall was empty. So it wasn't that packed a gig. A smaller club would have probably been a lot better, but yeah,
it works.
Yeah, so it works. It was a great gig for me. I loved it. I had a great time. I ranked that gig as one of my favorites I've ever been to.
So moving on to the second trap. Well, that's very accurate. Flytrap. It's a very angry, shouty song. Yeah. The drumming's on point, and you can hear a bass, which for a lot of albums from the 80s, I'm being a bass player as well, of course, I'm going to say this, you can't hear the fucking bass. But on this song, you can. I like this song. This is probably one of my second best songs on the album, if I'm completely honest, though. I actually like it. Angry, shouty, and good drumming and good bass. Nothing wrong with this song at all.
No, it is good. It is good, a good one. In fact, they all are. I can't... I mean, okay, it's been a while. I haven't listened to the album. I suppose should have for this show. But I don't like finding faults in albums that I've always loved. You know,
I'll tell you what is sticks out for me is a little solo at the end. It's like a little it just goes off on one, just kind of stops, goes digga 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 digga, and it goes on to this like Thin Lizzy like solo, and then just crashes back in down to hell and kicks off back with what Venom do best. But it's just great the way the song just sort of pauses. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we go straight into
Satanicus.
I love this one. The way this just kicks off.
Yeah, it's like chanting and stuff. I like when this album came out, the chanting thing was a thing for a bit, wasn't it? So, this was pretty cool. I don't mind this song at all. The title gives away what the song's about, obviously. But for me, it's another decent song. It's great songs. It's just, as we move on, some things just don't work for me at times. So I'll save that for when we get there.
This particular song as well does. I can picture Tony Dolan doing this one as well. Like we'll have a little talk about Venom versus Venom Inc. later, but I can just picture that band in particular doing that song live and Tony just owning it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I wish I could remember the set that they did when they played it, if they did any more from Possessed. But I'm sure they did. I'm sure they wouldn't have just done the one. I mean, okay, they've got a huge back catalogue to go through, and everyone wants to hear the classics, you know? But also, now that they're signed to Nuclear Blast and they've got the new album, is it called Ave? Is that what the album's called?
Ava something, yeah.
Yeah, Ave. I think they're going to need to promote that as well. So... they're either going to have to play for longer or cut out a few of the classics, which, bands have to promote their album. It's the way of the business. Yeah. That's why it's called the music business, you know?
burn this place to the ground. This is where things start to get a little bit testing for me, because it's a great song, but the vocals just keep fucking disappearing. It's a really good song. The solos are great. Dead screechy, screamy fucking solos. Very thrashy solos. But the vocals just... It's like the guy on the mixing board is just fading it down and putting it in the background and fading it up a little bit and then fading it down. And it's just... It's so fucking... grates on me like fuck, because it's a great song and it's just... The vocals just piss me off. Not because they're not good vocals. It's because the way it was mixed. This song in particular is a prime example of why they should have probably paid a little bit more attention. That's all I would say. It's a great song, spoiled by what's going on in the studio at the time, I think.
To me, it harkens back to this and also the next one, which obviously we'll get to. But it reminds me of the side two of At War With Satan. It has that feel to it, as if it was written at the same time but wasn't used on that album. That's how I see that song. But I've never noticed, actually, to be in truth, I've never noticed the vocals dipping in and out. I will listen back to it now, and I'll have a different ear. But maybe it's because I'm a vocalist myself, and I can sort of... I also have a tendency to pick out individual instruments. Even with everything else going on, I can hear just this one thing playing. I don't know whether that's a good or bad thing at times. But I'll definitely give it a spin with a different ear now.
Yeah, it's one of them. I've got my headphones on and I've turned it right up, and it's like he's coming towards the mic and he's singing, and then he's like just taking steps backwards and it keeps just fading out. And the solos are fucking on point all the way through this album. The solos are on it. There's no disputing it. The solos are spot on. I like the thrashy solos, and it's got a punky power metal mix, this album, I think, as well, which I don't mind. A bit of punk and power metal is fucking great.
That's what was great about Venom anyway, though. It was always, they were like the sort of slightly darker Motorhead, but there is just something for everyone with them, you know. And
sorry to interject, you're saying about the punk element. At the gig that I just mentioned, there were punks there, and they actually had Venom and Motorhead patches amongst all the anarchy stuff and the punk stuff that they had on their backpacks, and with Mohicans, you know, and they were there to enjoy Venom. And I remember an interview once with Kronos and Abaddon, and they were saying that they get punks and the hardcore kids and the metalheads, and everyone's there having a good time. There are three different genres. I mean, back then there was that sort of divide almost. This is back in the mid-80s. Nowadays, it's a lot different. But it was like everyone gets together and has a good time with Venom, and I enjoyed that. I like that.
So next up, we got Harmony Dies, and the riff on the beginning is catchy as fuck. This is one of them albums that, who owns this album? Which record company owns this? It's probably one of the big ones, has hoovered it all up. And if this could be remixed, this album would fucking sound amazing, especially with this track as well. Every time I'm listening to it, I'm thinking to myself, imagine if the tapes of this were digitally remastered or some shit like that, but more than likely, some record company dickhead is sitting on it and not going to do anything with it. So, This particular song is a testament to the fact that if this was remixed, this would be fucking awesome.
I wonder if it has been, actually, because a lot of their older records have been, you can get it with, you know, all the bonus tracks, liner notes, etc. So I wonder if it has been spruced up at all.
Yeah, because I got gifted the Black Metal Deluxe Edition.
Was that with a DVD?
This was a digital version. And I actually neglected to download the DVD files, you know, the video files, and I've lost the download links since then. So I missed out on that, but that's my bad. But I've got the VHS, I think, somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm a dinosaur.
This Harmony Dies, though, I think this and maybe another one, which we'll get to later, is my favourite song on the album. And I could just, again... I keep picturing the live show when I listen to this album or a rehearsal studio. And I would, you know, if I was in the band lights down, some introduction music playing through the tannoy, and then just boom, lights in, straight into this song. I think this would be an awesome set opener. And I think if either of the two bands just threw this in as an opener, it'd be a massive curveball. And I think the crowd would go mental. They'd just be happy to hear it.
Yeah, I think that would work. That would work because it is a good song. And it's sort of, yeah, there's no massive build up. You just have like the standard intro, whatever the band use.
It's just like it just runs the plectrum across the strings. And then there's, oh, brilliant. Great chorus. Yeah, tracks like this is why people like Venom, you know?
Possessed is next, and this is my favourite song on the album, let me say that.
Yeah, okay, not fair enough.
I like the eerie feeling of this one. They blew all the budget in on the intro to this one. No, it's like I've wrote in the notes, it's almost like they flicked a switch to up the sound of the track to like near CD quality because the vocals are better. It doesn't disappear into the music, and the drumming and guitars are great too. This I don't know what happened. This must have been like, they went, oh, we've still got X amount left in the budget. Fuck it, we'll put it all into this song. And it turned out really well. And Possessed for me is the best song on the album. This is my number one track. Great track.
Again, I'll listen to it in a different light from now on.
Oh, you're not too sure on this one, though?
No, I like the song. I absolutely do like the song. It is, in fact, I believe, the longest one on the album. Mystique.
Mystique,
that's by a few seconds, but only just a few. And that's probably because, I would say Mystique is the longest, definitely, because Possessed has that intro. So it's not actually music from the get-go. So,
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine. But it's very atmospheric, and it does work well. It's very creepy. Yes, eerie.
That's brings to me some old horror film, old Hammer horror or something like that, which
exactly,
is, still retains its bit of atmosphere if we watch it. But if you showed it to some kid, if you're like, what the fuck is this? But no, it's got that, I don't know, there's a town near me, Grays, which is, it's got like a lot of old houses, and you go into the town, there's like an old church, and there's like this massive allotment space, but it's like in the bottom of a hill, so like this big sort of hole in the town where everything goes down a level, and there's all this allotment. So with that, with the church in the background on a particularly horrible day, that just gets covered in fog and you can't see it. And just when I hear of like Black Sabbath and, you know, like the first Iron Maiden albums where you got Eddie and you got all those houses in the background.
Yeah.
I always think of like, because Grays isn't the nicest places to go out on a Saturday night either. But you think of that night out in a shitty club with a shitty band playing, but that band would be Maiden or Black Sabbath or Venom. And yeah, you think of the old horror films and just that, is what I have when I listen to old school metal and Possessed, the track, especially that introduction, it just brings all that together perfectly for me. I think it's great.
Side two starts off with Hellchild. This is the song that I've been listening to on the way to my now ex job, on the tube in the morning on the Central Line. This song has helped me push on to the Central Line when it's packed, because this is an angry song and it makes me go push my way onto fucking crowded tubes and get to work on time the past week. So they flicked the switch back to cassette tape quality on this song on the vocals again, unfortunately for me. But other than that, it's a good track and I like it.
Yeah, it is. It's a great song. And you saying angry, I can only agree with that. It does have a lot of rage in there. And and not in a derogative way, as in how it makes you feel. I think when music does that, it's a positive thing, regardless of the emotions that you feel. When music actually makes you feel an emotion, whatever that emotion is, that's a good thing. That means the music is doing its job, and it's what the artist has wanted the music to do for you.
It's a real catchy sort of more like a, just a classic rock riff that drives it as well. It just rolls off the tongue, shall we say. Like the song just moves along brilliantly. And again, another blistering solo by Mantis. Again, it's underrated. It's just written all over this. And for all the album's faults, it doesn't really take anything away from its good points. And if anything, it elevates them because you're kind of simmering through the, like we said, the production and the, again, the fact that it's just got this horrible sort of opinion up against it for most people anyway. I think people really do sit down and spend some time with this album. I think it really does reward repeat listens.
Yeah, and also take the cover, the artwork, the album cover out of the equation.
Mm, that's fair.
Yeah, because re-releases, they could have changed the cover. I don't know if they have. So I think, but just regardless, now, I've got an original vinyl from this album somewhere. It's probably up in the attic. I need to get all my vinyl down. Anyway, I would just say, take the cover completely out of the equation and focus on the music, and you'll end up having a good time listening to this album.
So Moonshine is next. It's a very thrashy riff and the bass playing along. It's very Iron Maiden proggy stuff and I like that. And this seems to be the song with the most rhymes in. He's a poet and he knows it. And the solos on this album are spot on as well. So this is probably the second best track for me on the album because it all kind of works. And a little bit of prog for me is good. So it's kind of gone away from the punk a little, but it's moved a little bit towards the Iron Maiden proggy type stuff. And I'm good with that.
I'm concurring with you here. I think this and Harmony Dies are my favourite tracks. And I just love the chorus. I love that moonshine sort of tortured background vocal in the chorus as well. It just works.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And it's, for me, I love those songs that have a chorus, they have a hook, and that also rhyme. I try and make all my lyrics rhyme as best I can when I'm writing my own, because I get the irritated when I'm listening to lyrics that don't rhyme. It just means that things have been written and it hasn't been thought about enough, to me, personally. And I like to, you know, these songs are almost like your children. For this one, they put a lot of effort in writing, I would say. And it's a good song. And again, that chorus, as you were saying, with the howl in the background, it works fucking well.
Wing and a Prayer. My description to the beginning is a wanky bit and then a wanky bass bit. Now, instrumentals with me, we've done a couple of albums so far and I've not been on board with the instrumentals we've had on the few albums that we've done. But actually, this is probably one of the first ones where I'm like, yeah, it's an instrumental, but it actually fits with the rest of the album. So I'm having it. It's good.
It gets my vote. It does fit. It does fit, but the thing is, it's not actually an instrumental because there's a part in there where you can hear Kronos go, whoa! So that doesn't... Does it qualify as an instrumental still? There is a small bit of vocal. Lyrics. There's no lyrics, it's just, whoa! One of his trademark things are in there.
Yeah, it's part instrumental, but it works. And the bass bit, wanky bass bit, you got me with that. And we've had albums we've reviewed where they've got wanky bass bits, and I'm like, no, but it works, man. It's a good little track.
Yeah, for me, this track is killer filler. It is filler, but it's not shit. It does work, and it does fit piece. It sits nicely in the album. It sort of it sits between Moonshine and leads nicely into Suffer Not the Children. So to me, it's a great little riff as well. It's nice and catchy. Yeah. So yeah, killer filler for me.
Suffer Not the Children, then the vocals are turned up on this one. Like it.
And it's my second favourite on the album.
Do you know what? The weird voice bits are all good and well, but I always harken back to they should have spent more time making the main vocals pop on some of the songs than doing the weird effects that they've done at times. If they concentrated on that maybe a bit more than you know, spending a little bit of the budget, because you can tell they probably didn't have that much money for this album. It would have worked better. The overall picture would have been better for me, but it's a good track.
I like this one.
I love the little, again, Mantis is just on fire on this album. Just that dun 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 dun, 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 the little ring at the end. Dun, 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 dun. And just like this, Kronos just does all sorts on this video because, well, he's doing whispers and sort of just like a snarl in the background, and it's sort of like a, I suppose, yeah, Possessed fits this quite well because it sounds like he's possessed, you know. There's all sorts going on during a chorus. Just the, do you know what I'm going on about? I'm losing myself here a little bit. But
You're getting it. He's quite diverse.
Yeah. And,
yes.
And it's just a really nice, when it kicks in, that Suffer Not the Children. And what he's powerful. Doing. Yeah, it's just really, it's nice and melodic. And I think Venom, they don't get a lot of credit for the melody in their songs. You know, they are kind of known as this bands that invented black metal accidentally. But, you know, they don't get quite a lot of credit for just how good a heavy metal band they are.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end of the track as well. Again, it kind of pauses and there's a little eerie bit with, again, with a load of whispering and Menace is like, yeah, the effects on his solo pedal and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
no, it's just a great little song.
Voya is a thrash-tastic riff, this one, and the speed. I love thrash speed metal. This has it. The vocals dive in and out occasionally. It does need a tweak, but this is another strong song, and it feels like it's building up as well. So, I like Voya. It's good. I'm anything thrashy, I'm all in.
Yeah, and also for a song that's quite fast, 3 minutes, it's... compared to some of the other songs on the album, where it's like an extra 20 seconds. Doesn't sound a lot, but honestly, it can be. And especially when you go through an entire album. And this works. This really does work. It doesn't overdo it. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's there, and it's it entertains. It keeps the balls in the air while it's playing. So.
There was an ongoing theme as well with Venom, wasn't there? There was the did it start with Teacher's Pet, or was there an album, a song on Welcome to Hell, where it was basically there's a hot teacher, you're looking down at a top sort of
or,
that bit of a, you know,
the Red Light Fever.
Was it Red? I know there was Teacher's Pet on Black Metal, and then let's have a look at Welcome to Hell's track listing quickly. Sons of Satan, Welcome to Hell, Schizo, Poison. Oh, I love Poison. We'll get back to that another day. Live Like an Angel, Die Like a Devil. That wasn't it, was it? I don't know. I think it might have, yes, no, you're right. It was Red Light Fever, the closing track of Welcome to Hell. Then you had Teacher's Pet on Black Metal. I'm not sure they touched on it with it, or Satan. Oh, Women, Liver and Hell, I suppose you could say that.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one kind of cuts in with that theme. It's the schoolboy fantasy of having your way with another classmate or with a teacher in particular. And I think it carries on as well
when Tony Dolan took over. There was a track on Primeval, I remember that was along those lines as well.
Moving on, Mystique. There's some great vocal ability shown on this album. Some fucking great vocal ability when you can hear it. It's like the midsection of this song as well is kind of changes it up, and the solos are quite proggy on this one as well. And I like a bit of cheesy and prog and rock, and especially on this album, there's got elements of that and punk as well. But I just keep harking back to the fucking sound on it, man. It's a great album, but it's getting dragged down by it a little bit at times, and he's running away from the mic mid-song, it sounds like, in this. So I like it, and the solos are spot on. Yeah.
I think that's actually what happens. I think that's what happens when you... I'm guilty of doing the same, and I have to go back and do it. I'm lucky I can see what I've done on digital. When I record, I can see the peaks and the dips when I'm singing, doing vocals, and I can see where one section will be the perfect pitch, the perfect height in these peaks and dips, and then the next one won't be. And it's like, bugger, I was like maybe a couple of inches further away from the microphone. And it's just because you get so engrossed and emotional while you're singing the vocals, and that's probably what happened. And they never went back and checked properly. And when the mix came in, when he sort of steps away from the microphone a bit, it's going to affect how things sound all the way through.
You mean you step away to take a breath, or you're into it. You maybe, you know, your body's moving along. You know when you do this, that type of vocal as well, you kind of always. Your body becomes a bit like an accordion, doesn't it?
Yes, you sort of just move in and out.
Notes and I guess
for me personally, I always say keep the sponge on your nose. Yeah, and also there's the pop filter, the big pair of women's tights on a coat hanger that you can have in front. Like maybe just have two of those and have one that you rest your nose on, that you know then that you're the same distance away from the microphone every single time. I've been trying to do that, and it's difficult here because I have two dogs that keep running into the mic stand.
Yeah, so. it's a skill that you learn along. Like I'm not a singer, but like having worked in radio in a few stations, you kind of find yourself.
Neither am I, mate. Don't worry about it.
you find yourself just living on the end, because when you saw we had cameras on when we started, my face is firmly planted on the mic. It's one of them things. It's about getting the ideal distance away and then just staying there. And if you forget for 1 minute, you can go back and fix it in post now, but back then you couldn't. So yeah, I think you're on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're on it with that one. But yeah. it's ruining it for me, and if we could go back and fix it would be fucking awesome. But it takes us on to the last song, which I think for me is an excellent way to finish the album. Too Loud for the Crowd. It's fast, thrashy track. The disappearing vocals kind of spoiled it at times, but at the same time, it kind of shines through that as well. If you're prepared to just overlook that because it is what it is, the album shines through for me. And this song is just a perfect example of how to finish an album, going out and kicking someone in the bollocks when you're finishing an album, and this works for me.
Yeah, this is my favourite song on the album, and it's when that drum beat kicks in at the beginning, when the song starts. It's the very first time I heard that, I knew that this song was going to be my favourite, and they had to do it live, and of course they did. I think they still do. Well, they did with Venom Inc. A couple of years ago, and awesome, bloody love this song.
Not really much to add to it, really. I think it's a perfect little closer.
Yes.
The lyrics sum everything up about Venom, about Motorhead, about heavy metal and rock and roll in general. You know, it's play loud, bang your head, and drink loads of beer and worship Satan. Not too bad in the way I live your life, is it?
So let's all give it a fucking rating. But I'm going to give it 2 ratings, and we're going to call it 10 because 10's easier to do out of 10. In its current form, let me preface my 7 out of 10. In its current form, 7. If it was fixed, it would be in like a 9, because it's there. It's all there. It just needs a tweak. It's all there. It just needs a tweak. It can be tweaked. They have machines. They can rebuild this album. You know what I mean? It's like the $6 million man. They can rebuild him, Lee Majors, so they can rebuild this. And I'd like to see it happen. I'd be all for it.
I'd say I'd agree with you, having like 2 scores. In its form now, I'd definitely say an 8, because it's... like I said, it invokes so many memories for me. It's not just the songs themselves, but the album as a whole, the period of time, and the gigs I was going to, the people I knew, people I fell out with, and everything that was happening. So an 8 for that. And if they fixed it, yeah, a 9. You know, if they tweaked all those little parts that we've mentioned today, where the vocals drop in and out, and having a little bit more here and there on the production values, you know, if it was more evenly spread. And yeah, if they could do that, then definitely a 9.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree, I think. I don't know if it'll probably do more damage than good sometimes. You know, I look at this like an old horror film with horrible special effects, but of the time, but you love it anyway. And I just think if someone comes along and sticks a bit of CGI in there to fix the cardboard monster, would it actually take away some of the charm rather than fix what was wrong? But we'll never know, will we? So, but yeah, no, I'll agree with you anyway. But yeah, I think this is a good 8 out of 10 album. And again, I think it's the hidden gem in Venom's catalog. And I think a lot of people would do themselves a favor, especially if they're fans of Welcome to Hell and Black Metal and At War with Satan. I think a bit more time spent with this album will bring a lot of rewards, and people should dig it out. And I think it's a perfect... The whole idea of this show was, when we was going to do reviews, is shine a little light on the underrated. And I think this is a perfect album to do that with.
Yes, indeed it is. It is. And if anyone hasn't heard this album but knows other Venom albums, please, after listening to this show, I hope that it makes you go out and check it out. And as I stated before, and I will stress this, take the artwork out of the equation. Buy a digital download version. Try if you can to get the original, and then try if there is an updated remastered version. I've got the original on digital, and obviously, as I mentioned, the vinyl. So now I'm going to look for an updated version and see if there is something that's been remastered. That will be something to definitely check out, and then compare the two together.
Yeah, it's definitely one to be looking out for if you've not heard it. And it's still on rotation on my phone. I was using it to go for a little wander down the canal today. So it's something, once you listen to it, you'll find yourself going back to it. And something that stood the test of time from 1985. And I'd still listen to it now. It's got some good thrash elements, and I'm a thrasher as well. So it's definitely worth looking at if you haven't.
Let's go through the rest of Venom's catalogue loosely then. So afterwards we had Calm Before the Storm. So Mantis leaves the band. 2 new guitarists come in. What do you think of Calm Before the Storm? What did you think of it at the time? You might, because obviously
at the time. Well, yeah. That album caused me to take a step back from Venom. Because I didn't really like that album so much. There was the one song, Chanting of the Priests, which I heard them play live at that gig. Or was it? Was it there? It was somewhere I heard them play it live. And I actually took a step back because it wasn't... I didn't find that album as raw as other albums. It didn't have that. Certainly didn't have the possessed rawness in to my ears. And yeah, I took a step back, and it was only years later that I thought, right, it's time to get back in with the whole things with Venom. But I've never really taken to that album personally.
So after that album, Cronus leaves the band, and he takes the two guitarists, Mike and Jim C, with him to do a solo project. Abaddon's left on his own. Mantis comes back into the band. Between the two of them, they get a three album record deal, and that's when they bring in Tony Dolan.
Yes.
They did three albums: Primeval, excellent album, Temples of Ice, and then what was the last one? The Wastelands. What do you think of the Tony Dolan era of the band? And then that leads to, we'll talk about Venom Inc. and what's going on with the band then.
Oh well, the Tony Dolan era, I love it. It's
was it something you liked at the time, or did you sort of go back retrospectively? And
oh, I went back retrospectively because after Calm Before the Storm, I sort of moved on a little bit because I that album, it felt like it let me down. Even though I've gone back and listened, and it's not as bad as I thought it was in my youth. So yeah. So you know, going back and getting back into the Venom thing, and like, oh fuck, I really did miss out here with the Dolan era for those albums, and in a way, I sort of there are times when people say to me, oh, I've never watched that TV show, and I'm so jealous, or they say they've never read a certain book that I have, and I wish that I could go back and delete what was in my brain so that I could enjoy it afresh and anew all over again. And that's how I had it with these Venom albums. I hadn't heard them before. So I was like, yes, this is so cool. And it was. And it's an era of Venom that has now stuck around. And I am so excited for their brand new album.
Yeah, the songs that I've heard that they brought out as well, Venom Inc., have been pretty fucking good. And we spoke to Tony Dolan recently. One of the nicest fucking blokes we've spoken to. He's such a down-to-earth guy. It was like, it was almost like an informal chat sitting in the pub having a pint. That's what it was like.
Yeah, they're all like that. I mean, because they're all on Facebook. The three of them are on Facebook, and they are all so down-to-earth and chatty with people. And that is so nice. It's so nice to see.
Yeah, it's very few people that do that, and it's definitely someone who will have on again because it's cool. So they've got the new album coming on the 11th of August, and I'll be listening to it. It's pretty fucking good stuff.
Well, what's your take, David, against the Venom and Venom Inc.? I mean, are you happy just to have both? Do you like have you listened to the new albums that Cronus has done with the new lineup, and how do you think it's going to measure up?
No, I haven't listened to the Cronus Venom. That Venom played at the Maryland Death Fest, and I didn't really want to go and watch. I mean, nothing against the guy, but I don't find he's as down to earth. When Venom Inc. toured, and they toured everywhere, club shows.
They
played in Copenhagen, the stage is smaller than the room I'm sitting in. You know, you couldn't get a drum kit and all the amps and three people with guitars. You couldn't get it in this room, but they managed it. They did the show, and they put on a fucking killer show. And that means that's them being so down to earth and these approachable guys, rather than only playing 3-4 times a year at festivals. You know, these guys are going to go out and do play bloody everywhere, so they can get to see the fans who want to see them.
It's that work ethic that I like about that particular band. They're not afraid to keep fucking touring and smashing it out all the time.
Exactly.
Which is fucking what you need nowadays, and you got to respect that. There's only a few people who keep doing it for as long as they have as well. So fair play to them and fucking power to them.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
I recently watched the new Venom at Bloodstock. I think they did like an hour set, and then saw, this is on YouTube, by the way. And then watched, there was two actually. There was a Venom Inc. show in a club, and then there was one at a festival as well. So I did two shows there. And what with Venom, it's like watching Alice Cooper. They've got big effects to the show, the big board at the back. And he's got a fantastic guitarist and a fantastic drummer, but it's sterile. It's very professional. Okay. It's very metal as well. It's like he's listened to a lot of modern stuff and tried updating Venom in a way, and it's good, but I can see where it's sort of lost its charm a little bit as well. It serves its purpose, but yeah, I think Venom Inc. have come along and just taken the rug out from under his feet, because again,
the rug out from under his feet and the crown off his head, absolutely 100%.
Yeah, because it's Venom Inc. are all about the small club, the piss and vinegar, the sticky carpet, the warm beer, and it's, you know, there's just more.
That is just the greatest analogy, yeah, of it. I couldn't have thought of better myself. Like excellent. Perfect.
It's just a raw. Obviously, the sound's not as clean, and yeah, it's just they've just took it, stripped it down to what's the word?
Bare bones.
Bare bones. Back to basics, and yeah, and they've done like three. What was it? Tony said he went, we've got to do a dozen shows next week, and he said next week we're going to such and such doing a dozen shows, then we're going to Germany and doing like four. He goes, and then it would be 300. We've done that'll be our 300th show. And then you look at Venom's tour page and they do like 10 shows a year.
Yeah.
And he must be thinking, fuck, like, why didn't I do that? Because I don't know what the coup is with it, but why are they doing like a dozen shows a year if that? And then these guys have come along and bang, 300 shows.
Well, that's why they signed to Nuclear Blast as well, because that one was fucking like, wow, this is fucking real, isn't it? So... The live show has got them fucking where they are, and fucking fair play to them because it's good music.
So, Dave, pleasure to have you on as always. So, tell everyone about where they can find your latest project and where they can find you and Metal Breakfast Radio. Exactly, do a bit of plug in and.
Well, Metal Breakfast Radio, that will be metalbreakfastradio.com or darksentinel.dk. Check your spelling on that because people do spell Sentinel wrong. But basically, have a look on Facebook and there's all the bands are there. Earth Sinner, Echelon, Down Among the Dead Men, and there's the new bands coming out pretty soon. There's obviously Troika Don, which will be myself and Cam Lee and Carl Willits on vocals. Yeah, and that's we're getting the music sorted right now, and then within a month we're going to start cracking ahead with the vocals. So that's
really exciting. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that's it's causing quite a stir at the moment, so we're very pleased about that. And then there's another project I'm doing called Hell, Frost and Fire, which is basically Celtic Frost and Hellhammer worship. So we've got that I'm working on with some other people, and it's just to do something different. And then there's a Finnish band that asked me to record vocals for their final album, and they've got all the lyrics and everything's done. I've just got to check it out and make sure. But the guy's gone through some personal stuff, and it's been delayed. And then as well, on top of that, there's a sort of a thrash death metal project. Oh, I suggested to someone. And we do basically Stormtroopers of Death metal, if you get it.
Okay, all right.
So we're going to try and do that. But the guy that suggested doing this, he seems to have disappeared. So I don't know if that's ever going to happen. Exactly. He may have just disappeared to write it. So maybe that's it.
So with the Celtic Frosty bands that you're going to be doing, every
Hell,
song,
Frost, yeah.
Hell, Frost and Fire, every song you've got to start with,
well, there's a lot of that in there, yeah. What we're doing is a few covers of Frost and a few covers of Hellhammer, and about six or seven tracks of original material. And it is basically just Celtic Frost worship, and if people are into that, then maybe we'll do another album. I might even suggest that we do some more songs for this album, because I don't want to do too many cover versions and not enough original. So we'll see how it goes.
I'm going for a real Celtic Frost phase at the moment because of those reissues. I got sent them to review.
So okay.
I'll go for those first four albums, and then I've got the whole collection down there anyway. I've got everything from Cold Lake to Parched with Thirst, and I've got the Hellhammer demo. So listening to those four albums has kind of made me dig the rest of the stuff out. So I'm going for a real phase at the moment of that band. Brilliant band.
So thank you very much, sir, for coming on and helping us review the Venom album. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You are our most visited guest, which you don't win anything. We just get to tell you it during the show. Thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure. It always is. And anytime. We're going to have to do something, maybe some sort of crossover for my radio show.
Yes.
You know, just if you guys just record a segment, because we don't do anything live. Mm. But if you guys record a segment of anything you want, really, and jump on and, we'll have you on the show.
That's it. That's the end of the show. Thanks to David Ingram for coming on. What a guy. Third time on the show. Very welcome anytime he likes. And we might do a crossover one day. We'll see how that goes. If you want to find us, go to Twitter at Rockshow Online. Go to rockshow.uk is our website. We're on Facebook. We're also on fucking iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere that's got good podcasts. Anything you'd like to add before we go, Joe?
No, not really. I've got a couple of reviews on Music Trespass and Brutalism.com, so go check that out. We've got a very special guest coming in the next couple of days. I don't want to say too much in case it gets cancelled. But, I think we're going to get Jason from Brave Words to do The Bleeding by Cannibal Corpse with us. We're going to get Mike Tyler from that metal station. He's going to come on and do Megadeth's So Far, So Good, So What. And we've got a bunch of albums we're going to do for this review show anyway, so plenty to be getting on with. And, so more to come. Thank you, the lovely audience as ever, for listening and sticking with us. And, we'll speak to you soon.
See you later.